So, Scott, about a month ago, asked, he was like, hey, can you and Sarah teach class on discipling through transition? And his thought process was we'd focus that on children and teens. And at first I kind of laughed at him because I was like, Scott, I only have a child of my, like a teen of my own. I haven't experienced that yet. Have not gone through that yet. Hello. Come on in. Come on in.
Hello.
And so I told him I hadn't experienced that yet, and he threw back on me. He's like, but yeah, but you've been a youth minister for 5+ years, so you probably have more knowledge. And I still don't think that's true, but we'll see. So I want to, by a show of hands, how many of you had children, teens in the past? In the past?
Or current.
Or current. Current, children or teens. Okay, so we've probably all dealt with transition, right? In some sort of way. And I think a lot of, if you're not in that category, maybe you don't have any grandchildren or anything like that. I think even what we're going to be going over, some of the steps in the end, I still think they can fit help with general transition, if that makes sense. I think a lot of what we're doing will mesh up with that. But first, what I'd like you to do is turn, if you have your Bibles, turn to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Chapter 6. And there's a little part that I want to focus on first, because this whole Faith and Family Summit is called discipleship, right? That's what we're kind of discussing and looking at. And so I think it's important, especially when it comes into transition, whether it be us in our own lives, or even with our children, I think there needs to be a little bit of focus on what this discipleship looks like and who ultimately is in charge. You know, it's a big belief of mine, and you guys haven't been here long enough for you to hear me say this, but I say this all the time where I tell parents, I'm like, you know, ultimately, yeah, I oversee your team, but ultimately, I'm not responsible for their faith walk. You as a parent are. You know, I want to be there and come alongside of you, and I want to help you with that, but ultimately, I get to see them like 2 hours a week. You live with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you'd be shocked. I've had parents that have told me, oh, my son's not baptized, and it's your fault. Sarah and I have heard it. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, you know, that's not true. It's what are you doing? What are you doing as a parent? How are you living your life? And I think that's a big role in, especially with transition, is they're looking at you and how you're handling that. And what that looks like. You know, when Sarah and I decided as a family that we were going to move from Tulsa to here, as soon as we knew, we started telling Naomi, and you got to understand, she was not even 3 at the time, but we started telling Naomi, we're moving to Texas. We're going to be getting a new house. We're going to be attending a new church. And I think a big thing of why we were doing that was we wanted her to already comprehend that, even though she's 2, that she knew something was coming, so that when we came here, it wasn't a big meltdown and freak out. And also, that was probably for us too, right? For us also in our mind to understand.
I think you ought to walk me through that quite a bit.
We are moving to Texas. We are getting a new house. We are going to a new church. And so it's funny because before we even moved here, and it was really, really quick, that transition period, before we even moved here, you could go up to Naomi and say, hey, where are we moving to? She'd go, Texas. We actually have a video of it in our house in Tulsa. I asked her, I said, hey, Naomi, where are we moving? She goes, Texas. And so I think how we react in transitions really help our children too, how we handle those. But if we look at this thought of discipleship, when it comes to discipleship, it's ultimately, like I said, it's the family's responsibility in that sense. And in Deuteronomy, especially, where we have these 10 commandments, you know, Moses gives Israel the 10 commandments. And immediately after Moses gives them the law, we read this. This is Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4 through 7. Attention, Israel, God our God, God the one and only. Love God your God with your whole heart. Love him with all that's in you. Love him with all you've got. Write these commandments that I've given you today on your hearts. Give them inside of you and let them inside your children. Talk about them wherever you are, sitting at home or walking in the street. Talk about them from the time you get up in the morning to when you fall into bed at night. Tie them on your hands and foreheads as a reminder. Inscribe them on the doorpost of your homes and on your city gates. You know, I read that because I see a lot of this, this thought process of this idea that everything we are in charge of as parents, we're in charge of, right? We're supposed to instill them in our children. You know, he wants to see us walk with our children in their path, instill that in them. And so when it comes to transition, I really seriously think it starts in how we're living our Christian walk and how we're living our life and preparing them for that. You know, they say, I read this quote in some of the resources that Sarah and I were looking, and this is a quote I found. They say that the only thing permanent in life is change. It's a true statement, isn't it? We remember change. It is something that is ingrained in us. I have a lot of good memories of change, and I have a lot of bad memories of change. And I know Sarah's the same way. You know, one of them was my parents were divorced. Just so there's good and there's bad, but that's something that we're always going to remember. But just because change is natural, it doesn't make it any easier, right? Change is difficult. It's something that's very, very hard. And I think it's even more hard for teens, especially teens and children. It's the hardest for them. You know, us adults, sometimes we're like, just get over it. And I think that's when we're either faking it or making it, right? We're putting on this front of trying to fake it. But even life events that are typical and expected may feel like a big deal to teens. To us, it may not be that big a deal. But to them, it probably is. It's probably a huge deal for them. So what I want us to do, Sarah's going to help me, because if I wrote on the board, you'd be like, oh my goodness, that's awful. I have list a few, but I want to get some thoughts of what are some common tough transitions. And this can be for children, this can be for teens, this can be for adults. What are some common tough transitions that we go through? What do you think? What are some?
Making new friends.
Huh?
What?
Making new friends.
What else?
I think speaking for the both of us, moving, right?
Yeah, we've been in a constant state of transition.
Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
It is.
It's exhausting, and you just want to curl up with a pillow.
Right. Now moving, for sure.
Moving's a big one. What else? What are some tough transitions that children, teens, or even us as adults go through on a day-to-day basis?
Divorce.
Yeah. It's a big one.
Illness.
Yep.
Is this the class on time for this?
That's down the hall.
Going to college or high school?
College to high school is a big one, right? And even more importantly, I was just talking to this past week at a youth ministers conference with some other youth ministers. Even going from fifth grade to sixth grade, that's a huge one. Like sometimes I look at sixth graders and I'm like, they're not even ready for this whole middle school bit. Like it's just in their mind, they're not prepared for that. And then again, middle school to high school. That's another big one. What else? What other ones?
You're talking about transitions.
Well, you know, I'm full of good, positive, a death.
Okay.
Death,
you forgot
that
Robert's going to move seats there.
Positive death.
Of course, the illness. We're alive. I'm sorry. I'm the clown. I'm just bringing it all down.
Oh, I was going to say.
Okay.
Oh, no, you get the red job.
Red death.
What else?
Job change.
Job change, yes.
I feel like I'm getting a contact high, guys.
Any other ones?
I have one.
Yeah.
It's where you're having to take care of your parents now. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
For my age group.
I was raised by my grandparents on and off, and like when I was 17-ish, almost 18, my grandparents got really, really sick, And so I had to start taking on that role, and I was like, what am I doing? I don't even know how to take care of myself. So
she had a great first year of college.
Whether you're like really young at that age or your experience, that's huge. Like, yeah. I remember having to change my grandpa's dressings, and I was like, whoa, I'm seeing my grandpa naked. This is awkward. So, yeah, totally.
What else? Any other ones that you can think of? I have a few more that I'm going to share. A couple of them that...
Retirement,
yeah.
Going to the job.
What is that like?
I won't experience that for a very long time.
You may wish it was sooner.
Yeah.
Even though I'm far from it. Relationships, dating, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Long-term, you know, engagements and that break up. And,
yeah. That's on my list. I'm going to talk about that one a little bit in a second. Marriage. Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's great.
That is a decision.
Whether you made the right decision or the wrong decision.
Tell you what will it be?
I think that's a good list. Here, I got you a chair in case we think of more. Here's a couple that I put, and I'm going to kind of read them, and I'm going to kind of, I want us to discuss why they're tough. I have some, I can help us with that if we can't come up with one. But here's like a top list that I could think of. And you're going to have to bear with me because my teen mindset, that's where all these are coming from. They're coming from children and teen perspective. But my first one was your child has moved from high school to middle school or from middle school to high school. Why is that tough? Any ideas?
Because it's tough on them.
Yeah, you know, that I read this quote, and it's a good way to put it, is this guy was saying, your child has gone from being a big fish in a little pond to a little fish in a big pond, right? You know, they're going to something that's twice as big as them. I remember when I was in that transition, the cool older kids were intimidating. And
so Madeline would have intimidated you?
I don't know. I remember my freshman year of high school. You have to understand, all these big schools here are foreign to me because my graduating class was 23. But our high school, I would say it would be more intimidating because it was so much smaller. And what I mean by that is everybody knew your business. Everybody knew what was going on. There were no secrets. And so I remember that it was intimidating because the seniors, I would walk through the hallway, and this was for every freshman, and you tried to walk in the middle in our hallway of our school. You tried to walk in the middle because that gave you the chance to either A, run into someone else to keep you from hitting the locker, or it gave you the chance that you might be able to stop yourself from hitting the locker, because that's what it was. Another one, and this one's going to seem, you're going to think, huh, haven't really thought about that one. But also a middle schooler going into high school as a freshman, that's also a little bit intimidating because not all of them, but a lot of the freshman girls start ignoring the freshman boys because they're looking at the junior and high school boys. Madeline, that ever happened with you?
Why are we thinking of Madeline?
Because she's in here. So, you know, there's this transition, very, 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 very difficult. I'm sure Ashley was the same way. Very, very difficult. But there's another one that I have, but I don't see it on here. Is your child is going through puberty. Did you say that? Sorry, I didn't hear that one. Puberty.
Ew, my bad.
I will tell you this.
No, we said it. Oh, we were sidebarring.
Sidebarring, okay.
Also known as clinically insane.
You know, the thing about this one is I haven't got to experience it yet, and I'm excited. Well, I have in a sense of being a youth minister, but usually it's I only have to deal with it for like an hour, and then they're back home, right? But, you know, this is actually a big one from a lot of things that I've read and I've heard other youth ministers talking about. And it's big because, one, A, it's, let's be honest, it's awkward as an adult, right? It's a little awkward.
No.
Well, unless you're my wife, who, you know, worked for welfare system and had to do that all the time. But for me, I'll tell you, that would be awkward for me, you know, just because I
Like, what do you tell your kid in that sense? But that's something that the awkwardness, hopefully by the time Naomi gets older, I'll get over that, because that's something that's very, very important and that we need to discuss with our kids and help them through that. You know, they need to understand it's normal, right? But a lot of times they're going to be too afraid to ask, from what I've seen. They're just going to be too afraid to ask about what's going on or how to handle this. Here's a big one, and Robert mentioned this. Your teen had a boyfriend or girlfriend at school, but not anymore, right? But not anymore. I know a lot of parents who shrug that off, and they think, eh, they're in high school, right? I think I've even done that at times. I'm like, eh, they're in high school. They're freshmen. They don't even know what love is.
It was the love of my life.
You know, you may have shrugged it off as puppy love, but in adolescence, having a significant other is everything. It's everything. And I know some of you are like, really? Yes, it's everything. You know, studies have shown that middle schoolers and high schoolers judge themselves by who they're dating and who they are with.
Yeah, I could have never dated you in high school.
I know. I know. And that's not only how they judge themselves, but it's also how others view them. And so when a relationship ends, it feels like ultimate rejection. And to make matters worse, especially if you're in a small school like me, when that ends, the rumors start flying. Like, she did this, he did this, he did this, he did this. And so it's a big thing. And then the last one that I had on my list, which I think we have that. Big events such as death, divorce, or remarriage. That's a big one, right? Big transition for kids. You know, when the whole family dynamic changes, especially with divorce, the kids are kind of right in the middle of that. And I can say that because I've been in that divorce family. You're right in the middle of that, and you really don't have a say. My parents got divorced when I was really, really young, so I had no say in the matter of what was going to happen and who I was going to be with and blah, blah, blah. So for the vast majority of my life, I live with my mom full time. And every other weekend, starting at 6 p.m. on Friday, my dad would come pick me up, and he had to drop me off 6 p.m. Sunday. That's the way it worked out. Until about my 8th grade year, and I pushed the envelope, and that's a whole nother story. Had a big blow up with my mom and lived with my dad full time. So, you know, those are big things, you know. That's a big influence on our children in that, and it's hard for them to cope with that. It's hard for them to cope with any of these transitions. Anything about that before we move on? Any other ones that you thought of or anything you want to throw in?
People who faith transitions.
Yeah.
Like people who stop going to church, even question their if there's a God.
Yeah.
If they like Mary's brother, I mean, he was raised the same way most of us in the room are. Mm-hmm. He decided like a year ago, like he just doesn't really know if he buys into any of it anymore.
Yeah.
After 35 years.
I'm glad you said that. You know, a big one, I've had a kind of a new transition, even Sarah has. In this past year, it's been a little weird. My brother, I have a half brother, and he's about 10 years older than me. But long story short, he got baptized in the church, attended church with my family. Then when he got to college, something changed. And I'm just going to fast forward through everything that's happened, but he's been married and divorced 3 times. He kind of turned into the black sheep of the family, was in trouble with the law, in and out of jail. Long story short, I hadn't talked to him in over 5 years because it was that bad. I mean, it was just one of those things. It wasn't working out. Well, as soon as we moved here this past summer, my grandma passed away, and we went back to Joplin, and we're staying at the funeral home, and I see something out of my corner of my eye coming, and the next thing I know, this guy has his arms around me, and it's my brother. And so I've been back in contact with him, and I'll tell you, it's been a little weird for me. And why it's been weird, I know this is going to sound harsh, why this has been weird is I've seen him be completely different in the sense that every month he's calling me for no apparent reason, and I don't know how to handle this transition. You know, you go from 5 years not talking to your brother to now him, you know, trying. And part of me, it's wrong for me to think this. Remember, minister's sin too. But part of me in the back of my head thinks, is this just a show? Like, is this just a game? What is he trying to do with this? But we got to see him at Christmas, and, you know, he gave Naomi a present. And so it's been really a really interesting transition. And even some of my other family are like, okay, this is a little weird. Like, how do we take this?
Because they don't talk to him. They just talk to you.
Yeah, because I'm like the middleman, and I've been encouraging them. I'm like, you know what? I think it's time. I think it's time we release that and we reach out to him and see what we can do. And so, yeah, things like that, faith transitions, family change, those are big deals, you know, and how we handle that. And again, I think stuff like this, even if we took all of these out that involve teens and we just focus on the ones that involve adults, the big key there is our kids are watching, right? They're watching. They're watching on how we react in what we do.
And it doesn't even have to be like our kids. I mean, like, maybe our kids have friends, or maybe there's some neighborhood people, or at the grocery store or wherever. I mean, people are always watching us and seeing how we handle things and how we cope with things.
Yeah. I mean, even the kids, the teens in these two rooms over here, they're watching you guys. I heard this past week from a speaker at NCYM. He said that in a teen's life, they need 3 to 4 adults, not including mom and dad, that they can talk to, that they can, you know, feel like they can go to and have conversations with them. You think about that? That's pretty big. You know, it made me think, after he made that comment, it made me think about our teens in general and thinking, well, what are there for 3 or 4 adults that aren't mom and dad? Who do we want them to be? You know, who do we want them? So if you're ever interested in helping teens, I'll hook you up.
But at the same time, picking back off that, when with our pray for our children thing that we do in the mornings,
yeah,
like that person can be one of those 4 people for our kids, and they need to be. They need to be actively involved,
yep,
through all those transitions that they're experiencing.
Yeah. So the big thing here is we have to remember with transitions, the way I look at it, it's kind of a journey of stages. If we think about it, it's a journey of different stages. And I love the imagery displayed in Exodus chapter 17 and verse 1. It's really neat of what it says. And I'm probably going to read a version that you don't have, which is fine. You can look it up later. It's the NRSV. And I love it because in the NRSV, it actually talks about what we have here. The people are being led out of the wilderness, right? That's what's happening here in Exodus chapter 17. And in the NRSV, it actually says they're being led out of the wilderness and they are journeyed by stages, meaning there are certain stages that they had to reach in order to get out. And I like this idea of journeying by stages as God leads his people on a stage, stage to stage through his journey. You know, the change is the movement from one stage to the next. That's what transition is. We're moving from one stage to the next. It's all about how we react in those two places. We're going to do a little activity here, and it might seem a little weird, but it's okay. We can get past the weirdness. And what I want you to do is I'm going to tell you what to do. And I know some of you don't have, we talked about this, you don't have grandkids, you don't have children. So maybe how you do this is where I say, your kid, you sub in yourself. Like, what is it for myself, okay? And you'll understand as we read through this. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a deep breath and think about your teen, your grandchild, or yourself. Capture that image and hold it in your mind. Hold that image in your mind. Now, when I ask you, I want to ask you to firmly fix your teen or yourself in your mind. What image did you go to? What was your teen doing? What were you doing? Were you smiling? Were they smiling? Were they angry? Were you angry? How old is your teen in that image? Or how old were you in that image? What else do you observe? Now, just a word of caution here. As you're thinking about that, you're not allowed to change the image. Okay? It's the first image you come to that you're holding in your mind based upon the questions I just asked. This isn't some sort of test. You're not going to fail. There's no right image. There's nothing right. It's just what you think is right or wrong. So I want you to think about that. And you need to understand, if you're from a teen perspective, if you look at that image and you say, wow, that's a very negative image that I think of my teen, you're not a bad parent. Okay? Understand that. Understand that. The reason this image is important is because it's the first image you come up with for your teen. It's probably the strongest you have right now, or even for yourself. It's the strongest one you have right now. So I want to ask yourself, why is that image the strongest? Is it based on something that happened recently? Is it based upon something you intensely desire or something you deeply fear? Tell yourself why this image is so strong and let it inform you about how you feel about your teen or yourself. Why focus so much on you? Because before you can truly see someone else, you need to look first at yourself. That's why I did that, because when I think, when we're talking about transitions, no matter what, how we handle that, we first need to look at ourselves. Because that's going to be the most benefit for our children, for those around us, is how we handle that. We have to live our life all the time understanding that they're watching us. I'll tell you, youth ministry is like the hardest job ever, because that's the one thing I have to remember. Like, how I act, they're going to see it. What I do, they're going to see it. How I handle a situation, they're going to see it. And they're going to remember that, and that's going to influence them. So how do you look at yourself in that image? How do you handle transition? You know, so what can we do? How can we handle transition? What is it that you and I can do? You know, ultimately, we can't control the changes that impact our teen, right? We can't do it. You can try. Probably going to fail. Because, I mean, for a lot of these, you'd have to, like, follow them 24/7 and say, no, you cannot have a boyfriend or girlfriend.
That's possible. They do have GPS locators.
Well, if you want to do that, see how that goes for you. But here's the thing. You can't control the changes that impact your teen, but you can pay attention to their feelings, right? To their concerns and their needs. You know, I haven't read all of it. Somebody recommended this, and Sarah has read a little bit this past week. And I've read a little bit. But I love the title, When Your Teenager Becomes the Stranger in Your House. It's really fascinating. There's a lot of scenarios where it talks about, you know, your son is in their room and you don't know what they're doing. Like, they used to always come talk to me, and now they're cut off. Pretty neat book. If you want to look at it afterwards, you can. Basically what he talks about so far in the gist of this book, again, I can't say I know all of it because I haven't read all of it yet, but the gist of what he's talking about is, you know, we can't control our teens, but you and I, we can analyze them. We can watch what they're doing. We can try and pay attention to their feelings and their concerns, because no one has more potential to impact your teenager or child than you. You got to get that through your head. It's all you. You are the one that can do that. But one of the greatest ways you can impact the life of your child is become intentional about parenting. Have a plan. Have a desire. You know, you need to understand that every person that your child comes into contact with has influence. It could get a little weird, a little fearful, actually, if you sit down and you made a list of all the people your child comes in contact with on a weekly basis. Ever thought about that? Knowing in your head that all of them contribute to the influence of your child. Now, I'm not saying we need to go hide our children. What I'm saying is we need to know who they're in contact with, right? Who's helping them with their transitions? I'll tell you, for a lot of them, I hope that Sarah and I are helping Naomi through her transitions. Now, I'm going to have to understand that some of those she probably doesn't want me to be in the middle of, right? But hopefully it's someone that I trust and that she trusts to help her with that. You know, the thing about it is we have to understand that ultimately, I think with any transition, and I think I would fail right now if I didn't say this, ultimately with any transition, we need to look back and remember that our child needs a foundation of faith, ultimately. I'll tell you, with every transition, it's gone back to what I believe that I've done. You know, what do I think God wants when I pray? What do I see in Scripture? What did I learn from my parents? They have to have that foundation of faith to sustain them and to help them to reach the end of their abilities or strength or control. So I want to give us 7 steps, and I'm going to have to work through these quickly. 7 steps real quickly of some things I think we can do to help transition. Are these all of them? No. I'm sure there's tons. And if you have one and you're like, hey, here's one, throw it out there. Because I think that's what this class is also, is how do we help anybody through a transition? I'm sure there's more than 7. Maybe someone has it narrowed down to 3. I don't know.
No.
But here's what I have. Yeah, you can write those down if you want. Take the long view. Take the long view. Let me explain that a second. I don't know about you, but especially with sometimes with putting things together, men probably can understand this. You know, when you get your child gets a toy or you get this new thing and you have to put it together, what do we like to do? We look at the pictures, throw the instructions out, we're done, right? Quickest way possible, put it together. I don't know about you, but when I do that, I usually have pieces like left over, or it's not put together right, or whatever. So this idea of take the long view is saying we're not going to rush through this transition.
Big picture.
We're going to look at the big picture, the implications that we have at the end, and however long it needs, that's what we're going to take. We're not going to rush through it. We're going to be aware of what it is we need to do and not rush through it. The second one, help kids name their emotions. I know this is going to sound a little weird, but this one guy says, hey, when your kid, your child or teen or even you are experiencing emotions, help these younger ones name that. You know, a lot of times they don't understand that they're going through anxiety. A lot of times they don't understand that ultimately it's anger, right? They don't understand that. So sit down with them and help them name that emotion. Help kids answer questions about transitions. You know, sit down and talk to them about that. Say, hey, what are you feeling right now? What questions do you have about this? Are those conversations going to be difficult? Yeah, right? They could very well be difficult, especially if they come to you and say, well, Dad, why did this guy break up with me? We don't know that answer. But we can at least sit down and help them answer questions about transition. Practice what you can practice.
What does that mean?
I'm going to tell you. Ultimately, again, we don't always have control, right? We don't have control over everything. But you know what? We can practice what we do have control in. You know, most of our difficulties with transition come from unknowns. So what I'm saying by that, practice what you can practice, is if you sit down with your child and they're going through a transition and you really don't know, right, what that's going to look like at the end, don't make something up. I think it's good for children and teens to understand you don't have all the answers. I'll tell you this quick story. The first time I started youth ministry in Tulsa, it was like, in the first month, I had a teen ask me a question about something in the Bible, and I said, I don't know. And I'll tell you, that was mind-blowing to them, because they thought, I should know everything. But I'll tell you what, that teen looked at me differently, from a perspective that they knew that no matter what, if I didn't know the answer, I would be honest with them and tell them I didn't know the answer.
So practice what you can practice.
And to follow that up, you looked it up together.
I did. Celebrate victories. Celebrate victories. You know, if you see your child overcome something, celebrate victories. Ease up on lesser priorities. You know, don't push. If they're going through a transition, I know some of you probably disagree. Don't push things. Like if they're going through a transition and you're like, well, all I need to do is make them go play football and they'll get over it. I think that's a negative. You know, don't pressure, ease up on the less priorities. And here's a big one. Pray for your kids in front of your kids. And I want to expand on that one. On all of these, when you're going through transitions yourself, let your teens or your children see this. Sit down with them and say, hey, you know what? I'm going through a transition right now, and this is what it looks like. Because ultimately, they're going to remember that. That's really what I think. They're going to remember this stuff right here and how we handle it, you and I. And not only as me as an individual, but if you're married, how you as a couple. I mean, wouldn't it be cool if you're praying with your teens and or your kids, and one of the things you're praying about is a transition that you're going through. Let them hear that. Let them hear that you're trusting God to help you in that transition.